We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Recovery Road, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm host Leah Mattinson, and first of all, I want to say thank you so much to everyone, wherever you are on this beautiful planet, tuning in today to take in the wisdom of the Master Your Life show. I'm joined this episode by a former co-host, friend, and fellow podcaster, Howard Rankin. Howard, how are you today?
I am great, Leah, and it's great to connect with you again and be on the air together.
So Howard is the director of science at Intuality Inc. and has extensive expertise and knowledge in the areas of psychology, neuroscience, behavior change, and neurotechnology. He has worked as an academic, researcher, and practitioner, and is also an experienced speaker, coach, and best-selling and award-winning author. Dr. Rankin has written 12 books in his own name, co-written another 10, and ghost-written 30 others. All nonfiction. He has been described as one of the leaders in behavior change. Howard has also published more than 30 scientific articles and has been a consultant to the NIH and the WHO. His work has been featured in many newspapers and magazines, and he has appeared on national networks, including CNN, ABC, CBS, BBC, and On The View, and 2020. His latest books include the I Think, Therefore I Am Wrong, A Guide to Bias, Political Correctness, Fake News, and the Future of Mankind, which explores the default setting of the mind and how that can lead us astray. Oh, come on. Power Talk, The Art of Effective Communication and Intuitive Rationality, The New Behavioral Direction of AI with Grant Reiner. His latest book, A Fall to Grace, The Art and Science of Redemption, is due out on Good Friday, 2022. He is also the creator and host of the How Not to Think podcast. Howard, awesome work in the world. Excited to have you here today to talk about your book primarily, A Fall to Grace, The Art and Science of Redemption. So Howard, what actually got you writing this book in particular? You've written so many. Mm-hmm.
Well, this book is based on my personal experience of doing something irresponsible and paying the price and suffering the consequences, which I'll go to shortly. So that happened almost 10 years ago. And that journey has been amazing. You are part of that journey as you welcome me to join you on the Master Your Life show, which we did for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So you're part of it too. But that journey was so revealing to me about what that says about how you have to deal with the challenges in your life, whether they are self-made or created by circumstances outside your control. So it was meaningful to me, and I wanted to share that so that it would help people who are struggling with those sorts of issues, mm-hmm. Which goes across the board. It's not just people who've done stupid things. It's also people who've been traumatized and, very often blame themselves for a situation where they really have no blame whatsoever. But as you know, life is about adaptation, and this is about how do you adapt in really difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just for the background to that, I was a fairly well-known psychologist. In 2005, I took on a client, female client, who was borderline personality and had some other issues. Was the most seductive client I'd ever encountered in almost 40 years of practice. You know, constantly telling her, "No, we're not going there. We're not having sex." And we worked together for 3 years, and it went pretty well. And at that point, it was time to stop. I think really for both of us, it was time to stop. She went and found another therapist. A few months later, she called and said, "Can I come back to?" Can I come and check in and tell you how I'm doing? I said, yeah, that's fine. Obviously, I wasn't going to meet her anywhere else except my office. So over the next 4 years, periodically, she dropped by and told me how she was doing and what have you. And on one of those visits in 2012, as she was leaving, she hugged me, she kissed me, and it degenerated into a consensual, very brief, very consensual relationship until I came to my senses like 48 hours later. And a month later, I got a call from the licensing board here in South Carolina to say that somebody had filed a complaint against me for sexual misconduct. And to cut a long story short, we maybe get into some of the details later, 8 months later, the board revoked my license to practice psychology in the state. And it was in the local newspapers, and it was the worst challenge I've ever had to deal with. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's the background.
Right. Very serious. Very. Because how long have you been practicing psychotherapy at that time?
At that point, I've been a psychologist for 36 years.
Yeah. So 36 years of building your reputation, kind of being in the upper echelon of that field, really. You were hanging out with the elite, maybe. Can we call it that?
Well, some of them.
Some of the elite. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so so this happens. And then what was the response of, this came out in the newspaper. How did it hit your family? How did you deal with it with your family? Were you married at the time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was married. We had at that point been married for, trying to do the math, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And it was the hardest thing I'd ever had to do, was to tell my wife, hey, not only did I, you know, fool around with somebody totally inappropriately, but now I might lose my license, my job. And of course, that sort of situation doesn't just hit you, it hits your family members too. You know, people are reading about it in the newspaper and all of this. They're making judgments. So it isn't just yours, it's your family's too. And, you know, my wife was amazing. She, of course, was very angry. But in my book, I point out she was able to forgive me. And we were able to work on it and you know, get together and stay together and actually be even better than we were before. Mm-hmm. But in my book, I make the point that there is a great line in the movie War Horse where an older couple are struggling, they're almost on the edge of bankruptcy, and the guy does something irresponsible. He goes and buys this expensive horse. And he says to his wife, oh, please don't hate me. And she says, and honestly, I think this is one of the greatest movie lines of all time. She says, I might hate you more, but that doesn't mean I love you less. Mm-hmm. Great line. Because, yeah, of course, when you're angry with somebody, it does not mean, and it's kind of difficult to feel positive and loving towards them. But, you know, love is a choice. It's an action. It's not just a feeling or even a feeling. And so, you know, she was amazing. And that was huge. I think had she reacted differently and wanted to divorce, obviously that would have exacerbated my situation. But she didn't. And, all I can say, that was incredible. She's really the heroine of the story, that she was able to do that. I think she understood what really happened. And So she understood. And of course, then we had to go through the process. Oh, it's going to be in the newspaper. We got a tip off that it was going to be in the newspaper because they called and said, oh, you know, could you comment? And my son had just graduated college and had literally just started his army career. He was at Fort Benning. He'd just been there a few days. Mm-hmm. And we thought, look, this is in the newspaper. I need to be the one to tell him what the heck's going on. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is in the book. So we called him. We said, we have to tell you about something. Got on a Zoom call. Explained what had happened. You know, my wife said, you know, of course, she was angry, but don't worry, we're not splitting up. And James, my son, said, Dad, I know who you are. That doesn't make any difference. And Mom, thank you so much for being so caring and loving. And by the way, do you guys need any money? And it was just an amazing call. It was just mind-blowing. It shows you that even in your darkest moments, people can step up and just shine the brightest light and the brightest perspective on things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was obviously crucial. That was a massive platform for me to say, okay, what am I going to do about this? How do I make this the best thing? You know, it's easy when things like that happen to say, this is the worst thing that's happened. Oh, my God. And yeah, and you go through a period like that, but it's got to be a short period. And then you have to say, okay, here's where we are. I've got to accept this. I've got to accept the situation. I've got to accept the responsibility. Now, how do I make the best of this?
Mm-hmm. And so were there ever times along the way where you didn't accept responsibility?
Well, you know,
where you fought it, where you went.
I mean, part of that was the way, honestly, these boards operate. Hmm. And anyone in the health business will know that a lot of these boards basically are the prosecutor, jury, and judge. And a lot of the time, it's you're guilty until proven innocent. Mm-hmm. And so there was quite a lot of things that I was very angry about, angry with how my lawyer recommended it be treated, angry about how they treated it, angry about the fact that they wouldn't even tell me who testified and what their testimony was. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even tell me that, which is ridiculous. So I got caught up in that initially, and then I had to say, forget it. It's mm-hmm. done, right? It's done. This is a situation. You might not like it. You can't stay stuck here. And that's one of the things I do see a lot with people when they feel they've been, you know, they've difficult circumstances, either from their own making or not, is, you know, you'll see in the paper, in fact, there was a recent case I saw of somebody who was, along with like 25 classmates, were abducted by a couple of guys, like, 35 years ago, and they sort of buried them in the ground, you know, in this bus, and they all managed to escape, but obviously it was traumatic. And then this guy was sentenced to life in prison. None of them, he didn't harm anyone apart from that. And there was this piece in the paper where he's coming up for parole, and one of these people said, he shouldn't be on parole. I've lived my life, you know, darkened by the shadow. And that's a problem, you know? If you have trauma, if your life is darkened by shadow, you need to address it. Yeah, you probably need professional help. But to stay stuck is to give too much power mm-hmm. to the people who you think did you wrong, whether they did or you didn't. And I see that all the time, where people say, oh, thank God, now I can finally move on with your life. Many times you don't get that sense of justice. Many times it's not even warranted, but even if it is, you don't get it. You cannot stay stuck there. You absolutely have to say, here's where I am. I don't like it, but that's okay. Here's where I am. How do I make the best of this situation? I'm the only one who can do it. I can't expect people to come and rescue me. They're not going to do it for me. I have to do it. And when you reach that point, then the door opens, I think. Mm-hmm. But until you do, you're stuck. And lots of people, as you know, can be stuck there for years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're really talking about how to tap into the virtue of courage and how to become more conscientious about your own behavior and what you realize in life, what you feel in life, and what you create in your life by your own growing up and taking responsibility and becoming more conscientious. Sometimes conscientiousness is like this elusive thing until something really comes and smacks us upside the head and says, hey, smarten up, get up.
Right.
And some people require more of the smacking than others, you know, or in different situations, you can be really conscientious. And then in others, you're kind of like, you know, not maybe so much. So you're working on it. So that's the shadow work part. So talk about what happened next for you. You went, okay, I've got to do something about this. You still had, you know, the media right there. There was all the public humiliation and shame. What was that like to walk through, and how did you sort of recover yourself with that?
Well, it was interesting. When my wife and I married way back in early 91, you know, she was a pretty devout Catholic. I was raised in a Jewish family, and I liked the heritage and what have you, but I wasn't spiritually inspired by Judaism. As I went through college, I was really interested in Buddhism. But when we got married, I said, I'm happy to come to church with you. I don't think I'm going to convert to Catholicism, but I'm happy to come to church. And we raised our son that way, went to church. But when this happened, I decided I absolutely did need to convert, that if I wanted to have a relationship with God, it needed to be on his terms, not mine. Mm-hmm. And I needed to sign up. And I did that. And interestingly, so, you know, I've been doing that for a number of years. And then I converted around this time, actually just before the final board decision. And then, of course, this comes out in the newspaper. And now I have to go to church. And I was so apprehensive about going to church. Mm-hmm. Because it had been all over the local newspaper, and, you know, I was well known there. I've been ushering for, you know, many years and part of it. And there were one or two people who knew, but most people didn't. Mm-hmm. And I walked in with the utmost trepidation. And first off, my mentor, a great guy who was the head usher, came up, looked me in the eye, said, "Doesn't matter to me, stay strong, I'm with you." And then like half a dozen people all came up and basically said the same thing. Mm-hmm. "Hold your head up. I don't care. You know, what have you." And it was amazing. It was simply, I mean, here I'd been in the chokehold of humiliation. Just being able to breathe a little bit was good. I wasn't expecting to smile. And that was huge. It's huge because when you're humiliated like this and shamed, you're out. You're out of the tribe, right? You're on the sidelines on your own. You're a pariah. And so anytime somebody comes and says, "I welcome you," basically, "I welcome you into, you know, my group, you're okay," it's massive. It's massive.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And I'll speak to the Catholic thing a little bit, because I was raised Catholic, so and I will say I'm not a practicing Catholic. I think God has got great things and the divine creator, awesome. The idea that in church you would be rejected, I think is a really funny thing. Isn't that just a funny peculiar? Because the church is supposed to be built on Christ, Christ being mm-hmm. the forgiver mm-hmm. of, you know, all mm-hmm. of the sin. And so that should be the first place that people can go and go, oh, hey, this is what I did for real. Mm-hmm. And, right. and then it's, and all is forgiven. So it's like this, it's backwards that we would mm-hmm. feel yep. or think that that mm-hmm. would be the case, that you'd be rejected. But it does give us a little bit of an insight into our own state of mind at the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because yes, of course, on paper and theory, that should be the case. But mm-hmm. you know, in the state that I was in, I wasn't having any positive thoughts at all. It was, oh my God, I'm going to walk into these people, and but the fact that they didn't was amazing, and showed me the power of being able to do that mm-hmm. when somebody is down. It's the single greatest thing you can do for somebody. Mm-hmm. So from then on, so that taught me something. You know, I assumed everybody, you know, was going to shun me. Everybody knew, you know, what have you. And that isn't the case. Mm-hmm. There are people who still care about you. Mm-hmm. And you're about to find out who they are.
Right.
And what that love and support really means to you, mm-hmm. you know, which is easy to take for granted outside a circumstance like this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was good. So, you know, I was fortunate. I had my family support. I had some friends support. I had, you know, this organization support. And that was helpful mm-hmm. for me to come to, okay, what am I going to do about it now? Make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. So in the book, do you talk about your relationship with Christ, or how maybe the forgiveness of sin helped you in your working through this?
Yeah. It is not a specifically, you know, particularly religious book. I mentioned this, and there's a couple of quotes that are relevant, but it's not a, you know, it's not, I mean, it's Christian in the sense of its message, but right. the context, you know, there's a couple of biblical quotes in there and stuff, but it's not very religious in that sense. Just in the sense that I felt at this point, like many people do when they mm-hmm. hit, if you want to call rock bottom, you know, the great quote is God lets you hit rock bottom to show that he is the rock at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this won't be news to a lot of people who've gone through difficult circumstances. And at that point when I converted, I wasn't sure. I didn't know what the board's decision was. But I knew that whatever was going to happen in my worldly life, this was the right decision spiritually for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now the book, you know, as I say, book's got a couple of relevant, you know, biblical verses, but it's not, we're not calling it a religious book.
So it's good for everybody. That's what he's right. saying. So you went through the public humiliation, the loss of your license, the noticing who was accepting you when you were being sort of cast away from the group. What was the next sort of things that happened that were real, tangible, and concrete that affected you in a positive or negative way? And then how did you work through those things?
Well, there are always, on the negative side, and again, all of this is in the book, there's always people trying to take advantage of you. And in fact, it transpired that one of my former clients, a lady, had found out about this, about what was happening. And she went to the local newspaper and I guess basically, you know, gossiped to them. She then actually made the mistake, and I don't know how she got this number, but she called up the mother of a client of mine and said, oh, well, you won't be seeing Dr. Rankin again. I just found out that, I've spilled all the beans and it's going to be in the paper tomorrow. You can read all about it and blah, blah, blah. And the mother was going, what the heck is going on? I don't want to hear this, and hung up. And then the woman called back again and said, I'm watching you read the paper tomorrow. It's all in there. And the reason I know about that is this woman told me about it. She actually wrote a letter to the licensing board after I had lost my license, pleading for, forgiveness, how I'd helped her daughter so much, and, how this crazy woman had basically gossiped to the newspaper. And so, that's one example of somebody trying to make out on your bad reputation. But what I started to do was, and I've always wanted and I've always enjoyed writing. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was in high school, that was definitely a consideration for a career. But back then, that didn't seem to be, a very lucrative career to go into writing. So I went off to psychology. But fortunately, at this time, there were a number of freelance sites looking for people to connect writers with people, wanting people write their books or what have you. And, I was fortunate that I was able to do that. And the next sort of miracle that happened to me was I was working this and I was getting a few gigs and jobs and gradually building up. And I'm like, yeah, this could work, give me a sense of purpose and helping people. Mm-hmm. And I got I pitched myself to somebody who was looking for a writer for a book about his business experiences. And he called me up and said, I've seen this and, I'd like to. And at that time, I was so sensitive. First thing, I would tell everybody what had happened. I'd say, well, Drew, that's great, but I need to tell you something, right. Have my license, what have you. There was silence. And he said, that's their loss, my gain. Mm-hmm. And as I say in the book, I could have reached through the phone to hug him, but because of the technical problems in doing that, we just plotted our way forward. And Drew was an amazing guy. He'd been very successful in business, in the banking business, one of the youngest vice presidents. Great story. But as we progressed, not long after we started, he told me that he'd actually been diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, but he seemed fine. And as we progressed, he seemed to be doing fine. Then one day he was in the hospital bed. And then as we progressed more, his wife called and said, we better get this book done, mm-hmm. like ASAP. Mm-hmm. And so we scrambled and rushed and finished the book, had a call with him, Zoom call, great call. Thank you so much. You're on the team. Thank you. And he died the next day. Mm-hmm. And to be part of that, to be part of helping somebody, tell their legacy, give them a legacy, do something meaningful was so meaningful to me that, oh my gosh, if I hadn't lost my license, I've never met this guy.
Yeah.
And yes. These are the amazing things that can happen, Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was real. And again, that's described in the book too in more detail, but that was huge. And then, just working hard and pursuing that, I gradually, established some stability. And over the last few years, it's been great. I've met so many great people, including yourself. And, your generosity inviting me to join you on the show, Master Your Life. We had a lot of fun. That's so important. Even 5, 6, 7 years later, mm-hmm. still important to get that validation from somebody you respect. So I really appreciate that. And I know that you have the right mindset, because I know what you have done with your own, medical condition and genetics. And I often use your story as an example of how to face reality. Hmm. You're given a diagnosis, the doctor says this, and in your case, I know your words were, that's not for me.
Right? Exactly.
Not for me. And what you weren't denying the diagnosis, but you're saying, there are other ways of me approaching this rather than standard medical procedure. And then I know there are people who do really well, even though they've got it. And I'm going to find out. And that's the very definition of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Not saying, oh, my God, oh, there's nothing I can do, and sort of then become totally dependent on the medical system and feel totally out of control. You didn't do that. You did the opposite. And, you know, I can't tell you how much I respect you for that, because that's what I'm saying in this book.
Right. And so the preciousness of the time, I think, with that, the fellow with Lou Gehrig's disease, and with your losing your license, there's some little thing that happens when you deal with this time issue where things change just like that. And you have a sudden appreciation for, hey, it's like life is not this big, long pattern of repeated looping okayness. There's things that happen that are abrupt and severe that can cause us to really have a different reverence for our families. So again, thank you for sharing your story and the story in the book, because it was this really, I probably think, a head snapping back, like, holy man, I was rolling along, everything's going okay. And then boom, just like a, you know, brick hits mm-hmm. you. And then mm-hmm. so many people can relate to that. I also think that there's so many people that have complex health issues, more so now than ever, you know, and what's coming out from what's coming out from the jab fest sort of thing is that there's been lots of side effects that are starting to come out now. And so again, it's this, all right, how do we acknowledge what's going on and how do we do something about it and stay conscious and conscientious in our quest for our wealth and stability, which is what you're talking about. It's like that creating from ashes, from the rubble. Who's the new Dr. Rankin? Who's the new Howard? It's like what the whole everything that would have been you was burnt to the ground. And so that whole, and maybe not everything, but just it right. feels like that when you're when your whole identity
yes.
is crushed. Yeah. And so for this other beautiful man who died, you know, from ALS, that's a horrible neurological illness. It's horrible. It's short, fast. But your appreciation for life, the sweetness that you suck out of every second, if your mindset's correct, because you know you're here on a time limited thing, you change how you behave. You change how you treat other people. You change how things become important or not important. So again, thank you for the book. I think that it's a really big gift for people who are maybe sitting, having made some poor decisions, because we all do, we're human. Right. It's like, damn, what the heck was that? What was that decision that I just made?
And, absolutely.
Yes. And what have I encouraged other people to do around me that maybe hasn't been that great for them either? And then how do I make things right with myself, so that in my health and in my wealth and in the way I conduct myself in my life, to be the best imperial shining version of myself. And so you can take us back into your book and sort of, so what are some of the ways that you did that, Howard, and that you continue to do it? Because you said it's almost 10 years out since this
right.
incident.
Mm-hmm. UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Was there a time sort of like a natural time where it really took like 2 or 3 years to kind of get your feet back under you? Or was it a little bit faster?
Yeah, I think, I think it was, well, I think, you know, we can think about different things. It was probably 18 months before I felt this is, you know, doing the freelance writing and the writing was viable. I could see, hey, this works. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had early on, immediately after this happened, a friend of mine who works in the defense industry had invited me to come and take a space in his office. And that was very generous at the time because I was totally lost at that point. It was just immediately after it happened. And just inviting me to be there and share some of the things and what have you made me feel, okay, maybe, you know, I can see the future here. Although, you know, it seemed unlikely that he would ever be able to offer me a job. It didn't matter. It was like, I've got a vision of something positive. And that's in the book. And I was very grateful to Mardi for doing that. Mm-hmm. Although I realized it was more a rest area than a destination. But it, you know, it took 18 months to do that. I did in the end to have to declare bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. I declared a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, which enabled us to keep our house. So, you know, I did do that. I think that was a good decision, to be honest. And so, you know, it's been a struggle. It certainly got a lot better. And, you know, it's just dealing authentically with those challenges that come up. And one of the other things here, again, I don't want this to be about me, though I do think, and this resonates with so many people in the health field, mm-hmm. I do think the way these boards operate is totally inappropriate. In the USA, I don't know what they're like in Canada, but in the US, you're told, oh, you never put a client on the stand. Mm-hmm. They're never going to, you know, they're not going to give you any. I've reached out to them for Freedom of Information Act. Tell me, they won't give me any documents. They won't tell me who testified, why, what they testified or anything. They won't do that. And this, forget my case. I'm not interested in getting a license again. But, you know, the people in the health profession, the doctors, the nurses, all the specialists who really give, you know, the vast percentage who are giving their time, mm-hmm. and, you know, giving their energy and everything they've got to help us, to be put in a situation like that, I think is completely wrong. I don't think there should ever be in any situation a sort of judging authority that has no accountability.
Right.
And so, one of the themes of the book, most of the book, a little bit about my story, and then mm-hmm. I get into, okay, how you deal with it. In the appendix, if you want to read more about the story and how that unfolded with the board, it is there too. And so that's kind of also a sort of backstory that I think might it has resonated, because when I put it out, you know, there on social media, I get a ton of people saying, amen, amen, this has got to change, this has got to change. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will be the beginning of, or at least stimulate some discussion.
Right. Wonderful. I think that we're hearing more and more about just how much ideology is the ideology of not awesomeness is being kind of touted everywhere in every educational system. And we don't have time to get into that on our interview, but many people are talking about these kind of crazy ideologies where there's no accountability. And there's also just not basic teaching of basic things that people should know. So instead of teaching actual literacy to children, there's a whole bunch of other shenanigans going on, for lack of a better term. And so all of the universities have been infiltrated by that. And this is not a cognitive distortion where I said the word all, I really did mean it. So, you know, like mm-hmm. it's a savvy student who can immerse themselves in that environment and then be okay coming out. having kept their own sense of autonomy. But there's lots of things going on. So it's not just USA, I guess, is my point, Howard. I think it's a worldwide, I think it's worldwide. And we're hearing that, you know, in other, from other psychologists, presenters, people who are high up in education, you know, so this, but the lack of accountability and actual transparency and proper reporting goes right back to this whole thing of honesty and that we were, and trust. And that's what our actual Western cultures were originally built on, the foundation of trust. So you could do business on a handshake. You could trust that the person's pie had in it only pie ingredients. There wasn't a bunch of other extra stuff. So we're at this point where, again, the audience is invited to just think about, you know, what are the areas of your life where you're kind of going, maybe I'm a little bit off in the weeds here. And how do I actually get back to being truthful with myself, number one. And then, so in your book, it's like the, how do you take action in your real life? Let's go back to that, because you talk about that. The chapter 13 bankruptcy, I do want to just talk about for a moment, because so many people are experiencing bankruptcy from medical issues.
Absolutely,
worldwide. And so again, it's this shame thing where people resist. I just want to encourage people to do more research about the actual number of people claiming bankruptcy. And I think we see more and more and more of it. And not that that makes it right. Try to be conscientious and do everything that you can, of course, to take care of your health and your wealth. However, we're living in very extraordinary times where many people haven't been able to work. Many people have been out of jobs. Many people have been unemployed, where they've never, ever not been employed in their life.
Right.
So they don't even know who to talk to. They don't know who to go to. They're sure as heck not going to go to their best friends who are still driving their cars and whatever they're doing. So, so does the book address kind of those sorts of things? What do you do in the real world when, you know, there's these challenging times? How do you accept what's going on?
Well, you know, a lot of it is about acceptance. A lot of it is about managing your emotions and particularly your anger. There are, and again, the defense mechanisms that we all use to try to avoid things, and the mature ones, the ones that work, which are related to the virtues you're talking about, you know, acceptance, gratitude, forgiveness, mercy, justice, all of those things are very important. And when you're in a situation like this, I think it's really critical to connect with those things, because that's what's going to get you out of it. And the danger is you just don't want to. I think the default setting is, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, every felon I've encountered in my clinical practice, you know, would say, it's not my fault. You know, it was the judge or my lawyer or my, you know, whatever. And you'd say, yeah, but you did try and rob a bank. Yeah, but.
Yes.
And so, it is coming back to those fundamentals. Honesty is right there with one of them, and humility. And in the book, I make the point that the cultural narrative, certainly in the U.S., you know, isn't really about humility. You know, the message is, oh, you got to be a strong, wise ass narcissist to be successful. No, you don't.
We do like men who can protect, provide, and profess. So I'm just going to say that that's my little shout out to all the dudes, all the men who are actually of that ilk. Because there is a place for the proper masculine and the honorable masculine, not the, and I think we could get into a whole conversation about narcissism that would just go, I'm sure, wonderfully. Let's go back though to virtue for a moment. One of the practices that I found really valuable along the span of time of dealing, you know, with family, the health issues, is appreciation. And so appreciation is not going, oh, thank you so much for everything that you do. Appreciation is more, I get what's going on here, and I can really have an appreciation for my part in it, how I created it. I can have an appreciation for other people and what's going on in their life. What do you think about that practice, Howard?
No, I think it's important. It's lined up with gratitude. It's about getting outside your own head and, you know, getting outside your own lens and taking a bigger picture look at what's going on. That, you know, we're all dependent, you know, on many people. You don't live on your own. Even the wealthiest guy in the world couldn't live on his own. He'd need a ton of people to keep him, you know, alive. And so, you know, just to accept that. We don't, you know, obviously in our busy lives, we don't stop and think about these things unless stuff like this happens to you. Mm-hmm. But that's when you get an appreciation of virtue, when you get appreciation of things to be really grateful for, mm-hmm. you know, especially, you know, during these times, there's a horrific war going on, you know, a few thousand miles away where people, it's unexplainable, really. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, we need to put that all in. We need to put our lives in perspective. And absolutely, that appreciation in the moment also brings mindfulness of the moment mm-hmm. rather than just ticking off the to-do list.
So in your book, do you go into some of these more yes. exercises?
Yes. Yeah, there's a workbook. Actually, there's two workbooks. There's a workbook for people to go through, and it includes all of the sorts of things we've been talking about. And there's also a workbook for people who want to support family members or friends who are going through this, mm-hmm. because a lot of time it's difficult. People don't know how to effectively support somebody. And so I go into some of those, mm-hmm. those tools of how you can help someone on their journey, how you can listen to them and so forth. So there's two workbooks, as I say, one for the person who's in the situation and one for anyone who wants to help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Could you share one of the questions from each? Maybe that's putting you on the spot, but I'm curious.
Well, for example, in the one for the supporters workbook, you know, I talk about the various stages of change, the five stages of change, pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and maintenance, and give some tools about, you know, if understand where this person is, mm-hmm. are they still not coming to terms with it? What could you say or do in that circumstances? Well, they have come to terms with it, but they're not moving forward with any, you know, action. What could you do there to help them? So that's the sort of thing that's in the support workbook. In the other workbook, there's quite a lot of stuff in there. But there are things like, you know, the 20 virtues, defense, mature defense mechanisms at work. And I question people and say, okay, how could you become more grateful or appreciative, as you said? Okay. How do you become more honest, right? In fact, one of the things I say, okay, three words that we tend to not use very much because we're in denial is I don't know or I was wrong.
Right, that's a huge
write out 50 times, I was wrong. Just do it because nobody wants to admit that, mm-hmm. but sometimes you have to.
Right, one of the best things I've seen in recent on recent podcasts. For anyone who's actually just listening to this as a podcast, I just want to invite you to come to the masteryourlife.ca website so you can see the video version, or come to the YouTube channel so you can see the video version, because that's important too, to actually put a face with the voices. And but on recent interviews, one of the things that is incredible courage to me is that some of the leaders in psychology, so that I would consider leaders, any Jordan Peterson, Dr. Jordan mm-hmm. Peterson, mm-hmm. he came out saying that he went for the jabs and then he went, oh, what? You're not going to let me travel? So he was just totally, he's got lots of really good interviews just about accepting mm-hmm. kind of that, mm-hmm. how he yep. went along with things. And so I would just encourage people who are wanting to say I'm wrong. He shows it in such a gracious way. You're showing it in a gracious way through your book. Why I specifically wanted to point that leader out is because he's, I think he's very well respected by yes, pretty much everybody. And so it's somebody mm-hmm. that you can go, well, if he can say I'm wrong, He's wrong. Right. Well, then probably I could do it also. So we've only got about a minute and a half left, Howard. What would be the takeaways that you would like to give the audience?
First, the book, Falling to Grace, The Art and Science of Redemption. It's coming out on the 15th. You can pre-order April 15th. You can pre-order it before then. And again, I think this is a book for, you know, anyone who has ever screwed up and even just thought they've screwed up, even if they haven't. We can be very hard on ourselves. We don't want to be that hard on ourselves. And this will help you accept your situation, which is really key, and go forward with honesty, authenticity, and gratitude, and you'll be amazed about what will happen in your life. It's be the greatest journey you ever have taken. Certainly has been for me.
Awesome. 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 Thank you so much for being my guest today, Howard. It was lots of fun to get reconnected. And I hope everyone gets out there and gets a copy of the book. And please go to Amazon and make sure that you leave your reader feedback, because that's how authors do great in their work. So showing a little appreciation for Howard and all his efforts over the past 10 years, the good comeback, the great hero's journey, and that everyone can take it. We invite you to do that on Master Your Life. So everyone, love yourselves, love each other, mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.